one of our continent's eminent voiceover artists, Chilulemba, the voiceover plug.
Welcome to this episode of The Voiceover Plug. My name is Chilulemba. Thank you for joining me. In episode 5, I'm doing something a bit different. I'm welcoming a guest, somebody who I've looked at from afar and admired the way that he pushes his hustle on TikTok and on all social media platforms. He's a voice artist who's making an impact, and his name is Temba Robin. One of the things that he does is he runs a channel on YouTube called Sketchy Tech, where he shares some information with other voiceover artists and other people who would like to get into the industry about the tech side of things mostly. And so I thought if I had the opportunity to speak to somebody who is on this journey, he's one of the people who's best placed. Please welcome Temba Robin.
The voiceover plug.
We're going to go straight into it. I want to get some biographical stuff, but we can probably do that later because, you know, maybe now we just dive into software stuff.
Yeah.
So on my side, kind of when I started out, I was looking to people within my network and seeing what they were working with. Mm. And one of the guys that used to give me a lot of info is a guy called Mac. Now, he worked at a radio station. Yes. So consequently, what they were using is Pro Tools, and they had some high-end equipment. So when he was advising me, he was giving me all these big things. And, you know, me being green, I was buying all those things. And now I realize that a lot of guys, for instance, use Adobe Audition, especially in the US, if they're voiceover artists. Mm. But I have a crutch because I've been using Pro Tools since 2006, 2007. So that's kind of all I know, you know what I mean? And to migrate to a different DAW is a mission. But first of all, what are you using for software?
So funny enough, I'm on Adobe Audition.
Yeah. And a lot of people that I know of who do voice prefer using that.
Mm. So I've only been on Audition for a short while. My father used Audition many, many moons ago. So
was your father a musician?
Yeah,
he
works at the church, so with the whole sound side.
Yeah.
So I used to tamper around with Audition when I was probably, you know, 10, 11 years old.
Yeah.
Then obviously you go through school and you do all the other stuff. Mm. And when I started again, I started on Audacity.
Oh, yeah, because Audacity is the free version.
Yeah.
Clunky and...
So this is the thing, though, is... And we talk about, you know, Audacity and which door you should use and that sort of thing. And I know Grant Harris.
Yeah.
Grant will absolutely crucify anyone who wants to use Audacity. my thing at the end of the day is I actually learned so much using Audacity that I was quick. I could edit really quickly.
Yeah.
So for a long time, I was like, what's the point in moving? It's going to take me longer to edit.
Yeah.
I know the shortcuts. I know how to take plosives out, and I've got all my presets that sort of thing. So Audacity was fine for the longest time. But then when you're trying to do a little bit of sound design to give your clients something extra, that's when I started feeling like Audacity was starting to fall short. And working on multiple tracks if you're doing something long
form. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So that's where the need to move over came in.
Yeah.
And I thought of going Pro Tools, but Pro Tools is a powerhouse. I mean, you Pro Tools guys are another breed.
I don't know. I think a lot of, because I used to think it was overkill for what I did, because normally some time back, all I was doing was using one track for voice before I even, you know, figured out the multi-track thing. And then later on, as you grow, you realize, oh, flip, I can import video. So when I get a promo, which has a guide voice on it, and I need to match the timings, then, you know, Pro Tools is good for things like that. And then you start figuring out little other things, you know, how to punch in and punch out, etc. But it is still, for a working voice artist, overkill, I think. And then what I've noticed they've done now is they've brought the price down. They've broken it down into 3 packages. I don't know if you've noticed that.
I haven't.
They've got Pro Tools Artist, which has an annual subscription, I think, of like $60? No, like a low price.
Yeah.
And then they've got Pro Tools Studio, which has a few more features, which is what I've got now. And then they've got Pro Tools Ultra or something if you're looking for Dolby Sound or whatever. Yeah. So I think they've woken up to the fact that there's a group of people who might think it's too complex, too restrictive, too expensive, and they're trying to rope those people in by simplifying things, and, you know, moving them from different DAOs into their ecosystem. Mm. I think that's what's going on.
I think what's nice about that is it allows then someone to start and then move with, you might be a novice today, but you might be an expert in a few years' time.
Exactly.
And you can still stay on the thing, whereas you would never do that on Audacity. You probably start outliving Audition if you want to get super complex. So I think it's...
I mean, previously they had a thing called Pro Tools First, but Pro Tools First was almost like... What's the one? Audacity.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm going to be confusing Audacity and Adobe Audition. The A's in there, the vowels. But Pro Tools First was kind of their answer to that, I think.
Mm.
And I don't know anyone who really, you know, used it for a long period of time. It had restrictions in terms of how long your track could be.
Wow.
And then I think you could also only export MP3s and all these other things. But they've tried to change that. Another question that I got this week, so maybe we could tackle from a voiceover artist who is looking to start a studio. And there are a lot of people who are looking to enter, but then when they see us doing our thing, they kind of think you can get away with it with minimal investment, which I think to a degree could be true, but then obviously you'll hit a brick wall at some point or a ceiling rather. And so the questions that I was getting, for instance, were, what mic will allow me to record if I don't have a booth? And you know that, and the person was mixing up insulation and soundproofing, and things like that. And I think you tackled something like that on one of your videos on Sketchy Tech.
Yeah.
So, say I'm a guy who's starting out, and I'm coming to you, and I'm like with that exact same question. What are the kind of things you throw back my way?
Well, I think the simplest thing that we have to establish is what if you're going for a microphone, are you going dynamic or condenser?
Condenser, yeah.
So, you know, your, what's it, the Shure SM58? The stage, the good old stage mic.
Yeah.
So that one, you know, you need to put a lot of power into that. It won't pick up too much of your room. So on those dynamic mics, I think you can probably get away with a room that's not well treated.
Yeah.
And I suppose on that note, when we talk about treatment is... Mm. Soundproofing, and this is what I think we always confuse. Soundproofing means sound isn't getting in or out.
Yeah.
I think you could probably still have bad acoustics in a room. You just can't hear it from the room next door.
Yes.
Once we've treated your sound like the spot that we're in today of yours, is it's just stopping those reverberations from bouncing around. So you've got panels up strategically in places. And I think that's essential. It's something that you have to train your ear to hear. More and more of.
Yeah.
I've treated my room, and after like a year and a half later, I'm going, hang on, I'm hearing a reflection from that back corner or something. And then I go and shuffle and I play with it. So it's...
Hashtag pro level. Yeah.
I pinpointed my spider sense. So, you know, you want to dampen the room as much as you can.
Yeah.
But you might find that you get more sensitive to echo and that sort of thing. But as a novice, you don't really know what you're looking for.
Yeah. And this is the thing. I mean, like, especially for people establishing a home studio, I've been in a situation where I'm giving advice, but then I realize that it's a long journey.
Yeah.
It's like maybe a year into it, do you start figuring out things yourself? Because it's stuff that has to start being internalized in your mind before you can start identifying things that the engineer is telling you about, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a long journey, but I think a lot of people think if I get the mic, if I do this and this, I'm good to go. I'm going to be providing world class audio, you know, from day one, which isn't ordinarily the situation. You have to commit that it's a long, long journey.
I think the interesting thing also with the, it's almost like the safety belt theory, you know, the guy who makes a safety belt, his work is never appreciated until the one moment when you need it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's the same with a sound engineer and well-recorded audio. You don't know well-recorded audio until you hear like a bad recording and then you go, that's bad. And then suddenly you appreciate all
You're
the
right,
good recordings.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's it. But I think to what you said, it is a journey, and maybe don't record in the biggest room in your house.
Yeah. Yeah.
My room that I record in is the same size as your booth there.
Yeah.
Or my booth's the same size as your
the booth. Yeah.
And it's not even like, it's 1.8, maybe 2 meters by maybe a meter across.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Lucky enough to have a weirdly shaped room like that in the house.
Mm.
But, you know, I think people must go for the closet thing.
Yeah. And if you do the class, I mean, if you are in a room like that, what are you doing to kind of, you know, make the sound not bounce over hard surfaces? What are you doing in your case? Is it, have you got panels that you've custom made, or have you just put clothes up in there?
So now I've got the pyramids, but when I first started, I got an old mattress.
Yeah.
I cut up one of those old mattresses. I put it in a wooden frame. I built wooden frames, covered it with black cloth. And that's how I started at the beginning. Yeah, I wanted it to look nice. So yes, this industry, to get started, to get going, it can cost you a lot of money, but also work smart.
Yeah.
This is very much, this is one of those industries that will reward you for working smart, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And then so back to the mic story. So you talked about the Shure, I think you said the
50,
SM58. Or some. I mean, I remember when I was, the reason I first got the SM7B, it was before podcasting even crossed my mind.
What?
It was because a friend of mine, his name is Ruan. Ruan said, if you're traveling a lot, because he noticed I was doing a lot of travel back in like 2013, 2014. He said the Shure SM7B is a dynamic mic, but then it only captures your voice from up front. And so it might be a good one for traveling with. And I realized after a while that that wasn't really the case after my many travels. But, you know, it's kind of a thing that you have to figure out as you go. It's a good mic for what it does. Like right now, we're using the SM7Bs. But for traveling, I found that as long as I was, for instance, in a car, because cars have, and people don't realize it, they've got foam on the side of the doors and that kind of thing. So very good for acoustics. And that's kind of what I wanted, started doing when I traveled. I'd look for a car to hire and then use that, find like a quiet space and then record in the evening or whatever, you know. And that's, I found, you know, it didn't matter which condenser mic I was using, you know,
To say thanks also on that, though, is because I remember seeing that video of yours recording in the car.
Yeah.
And then when I traveled down to the Eastern Cape.
Oh, nice.
Thing, I think it was during December. I was traveling around.
Yeah.
And I built myself a mount that would go on the back of the
driver's. Didn't you put a video? You put a video online doing that.
Yeah, I think I uploaded pictures of it or something.
Yeah. I kind of, it rings a bell. But interestingly enough, I thought we only do it here, but I joined a few groups on Clubhouse.
Mm.
I don't know if they're called groups. Whatever they're called. And there's some which had voice artists and sound engineers in there. And one guy who works for Disney was saying that for some of the guys who do animation, because of the restrictions during lockdown, he had to physically drive to their houses, the voice artists' houses, and then put them in his car and then put his Sennheiser 416 with a cable into the car. And then, you know, connect the thing from his house or something like that so that they could record. And interestingly, what they did, according to him, is that when lockdown happened, one of the big agencies that represents top-tier voice artists, they bought all their artists those Apogee microphones. The Apogee mic, the one that plugs into your iPhone.
Yeah.
They bought those for them and sent them, you know, via courier. And he was saying, it didn't work because maybe the guys didn't know how to use them, or he just didn't trust the quality of them.
Mm.
And so that's why he had to be driving, you know, to record guys in cars over there. So interesting stories like that. Yeah.
But I mean, I think it just goes to say, you don't have to go and spend. I probably had to spend about 6,000 rand on just paneling one section of the booth.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So sound treatment and acoustics can rack up very quickly.
But it can, yeah.
You know, if you don't mind the aesthetic look, blankets in the right way work.
Absolutely. Like a lot of, before I started doing the car thing, I would, in hotel rooms, just go under the duvet and just put it over and, you know, make some little tent kind of thing, you know, and get away with it. All right, so let's start with your microphone. What are you using, your personally, for your VO business at your studio?
So I'm switching up at the moment between AC Electronics X1A.
Oh, okay.
So that's sort of my workhorse. And then for quick
they've got jobs, like a glossy black look.
I think that one's actually discontinued. But really, really nice little mic. And then I've got a Samson, the CO3.
Yeah.
The good old That was actually my first microphone.
Okay.
But I didn't have an interface.
Oh.
So I couldn't use it.
So what? Or so you just had it like as a prop?
Yeah. So my first year.
Yeah.
I had a beautiful microphone that I couldn't use until I had enough money to buy.
And then what interface? Because so you've got Adobe Audition running, Adobe Audition, and then you've got what interface that's feeding into it?
Then we're using the Audient ID
14.
Yeah,
I had the ID 4, I think, which is the smaller. Is the ID 4? Yeah, yeah.
So the only reason I went for the 14 is just to be able to do podcasting.
Because how many mic inputs has the 14?
It's got two, without using the optic.
Because then you can extend the, okay. That's fantastic, man. No, the sound, the preamps in the Audient ID 14, whatnot, like world class, like really, really good. And then I've also, my ID 4 broke and twice it just packed up. And so during the time that I was waiting for this one that I have now, the Apollo Twin, I bought, because Audient moved into making those Evo sound interfaces. I'm not sure you've seen those.
I think so, yeah.
I'll show you one before you go. And they're pretty nice. I'm not too sure. It's like a different range, but also produced by Audient. So I don't know what the story was. And now they've come up with one called the Evo, I think it's the Evo 16.
Yeah.
With I think it's got 8 mic inputs.
Also
going to be great for podcasting if you've got a big panel or whatever. All right, cool. So I think we've covered some good ground. What advice would you give to, and I know you've given a very good bit of wisdom about not working smart and figuring things out like that so that you don't have to splurge a lot. But I think there's also the misconception. A lot of people think they're coming to the industry and they can do it part-time and they can make money, and not realizing that sometimes there's an investment that you're going to have to make, which is huge in some instances. But if somebody's starting out, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think the overall view, look, I came into voiceover thinking I was going to do it part-time. And I realized along the way that if you apply yourself, you really can get grounds. The thing I'll say, yes, it's an investment. You've got to make sure that you've got a nice setup.
Yeah.
That's going to take the work off you. I've had it with the first microphone that I could actually use. And it was a terrible little microphone. I had to work twice as hard to post-product everything to a way that it was
usable.
Yeah, exactly. So the more money you spend, or the better equipment you get, let me rather put it that way, the less time you're going to take a lot of work out of your workflow, and you just get to the finished product a lot quicker. But I think another thing is the investment in actual time and practice of your actual skill. I think I've said it a couple of times in a few discussions where I say this is your tool. Your voice, my voice, these are our tools.
Yeah.
And as an artisan, you need to know how to use your tool. You know, a man with a bow and arrow who can't shoot straight. he can call himself an archer, but, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's to practice. You mentioned in your last video with knowing your subject matter. I had a voiceover once. The name of the country, I can't remember what it was, but it sounded like two countries.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I kept putting a space in it, and I was like, why have they made this typo all the way through? And then I went and looked it up,
and
it's like, it's kind of like one of the scenarios like Trinidad and Tobago.
That's the one that came to mind.
It's another one. Yeah. But you have to apply yourself and that sort of thing. So I'd say, if you want to treat it as a part-time thing, great.
Yeah.
You will make a few rands here and there, but there is money to be made in it if you apply yourself.
Oh, fantastic. And how long? So I said at the beginning before we went in that I wanted to do the biographicals at the end so that we can get straight into the tech. So just briefly, you've been in the industry for like a number of years. I know you spread out because you're doing acting and you're doing VO. So what started first, which one is your first love?
Started doing acting. That's where I thought everything was going. And I thought, well, maybe I can be a voice artist. But a lot of the time people say, hey, you've got a nice voice, go be a voice artist. But you don't know how to start.
No one
helps you. So my first, I'd say I've been doing VO for about 5 years now. My first 2 years was solely online. Just only online. Just voices.com. And I did like four jobs my first year.
Yeah, the whole year.
I maybe did 8 jobs the second year, and then by the third year, suddenly things started to switch on. So you gotta plug and put in the time.
And would you say things started to switch on when you got with an agent, or what kind of, you know, opened the floodgates, if you think back?
I'm very much a self-promotion type of person. I don't want to wait for people to promote me. I'll go. So I've always, I made a little Wix website, put it out there.
Yeah.
My social media, just try and plug as much stuff out there as I can. So that's where I sort of started getting a steady pickup. But since I got an agent last year.
Oh, okay.
Since I got an agent now, I'm doing a lot more corporate work in South Africa, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas
before
I'd only really have overseas clients, which is great, but you want to be working in your own country.
Absolutely. So, no, cool.
Yeah.
No, thanks so much, Themba, for coming through.
Awesome, man.
Tell people your handles and all these other good things.
If you want to go and check out my TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, all of it is Themba with an H, Robin, R-O-B-I-N, and that's all over the place. If you just type in Themba Robin, you'll find all my socials. And then if you want to check out any cool information about tech, voiceover stuff, you can go and check out Sketchy Tech ZA on YouTube.
Fantastic. And Sketchy Tech is a very good resource. The first time I saw a video in there, like, damn. I wish I had this when I was starting out. So yeah, no, thanks so much for your time, man. You've been so gracious. Thank you so much, Themba. I enjoyed this episode of The Voiceover Plug, and I'm hoping to rope in even more people from my network so that they could share their insights with you. Until next time, take care.
And that was The Voiceover Plug with Chilulemba. Catch Chilu on social media using the handle @Chilulemba. And if you haven't checked out his memoir, Finding My Voice, get it as an audiobook on Audible, and ebook or paperback on Amazon.